Welcome to episode 309 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. This episode, we discuss Brad Arthur's sacking, Magic Round report card, and much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 309 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is Rugby League for the people. I'm your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, how are you doing this week?
Dr. T, before we begin, we just need to do a quick weather update, a Rugby League Republic weather update here. It's Dolphins are hot in Alice Springs. And then the magic of Western Sydney has all gone, bunch of losers out there, and hell has frozen over with the news coming out of the Eels. But other than that, Dr. T, I'm doing well, apart from that very sad weather report. How about yourself?
Oh, look, it's been a bit of a sad week for if you're an Eels fan, particularly if you're the Eels coach who got sacked the day before his 50th birthday. So well done, Parramatta Eels board, for their impeccable timing.
Oh, my gosh.
Poor old really? Brad Arthur. Yeah, poor old Brad Arthur. We can talk about that later. So, look, we're going to dedicate this episode to Brad Arthur. I hope he has a 50th, great 50th birthday celebration. And, look. Let's try and be positive, Tish. The one positive thing I could say maybe to Brad Arthur is, look, count yourself lucky. You don't have to coach the Eels anymore. Happy birthday. That's one way to look at it. You know, free of the shackles of the Eels coaching, curse. Brad Arthur, we've been hearing rumors for a long time and, for the last 4 weeks or so, they've just not really shown much effort. Lots to get into later, but let's not get into it now. But we got a jam-packed episode. We're going to talk Origin as well. There's talk around, especially with the Blues, what are we going to do with the halfback situation? So I thought we'd go through and kind of give our predictions of who we think the Blues squad might be. We're going to talk about the Magic Round, talk a little bit about what the future of the Magic Round looks like, what's a report card, how did it all go? Obviously, Brad Arthur as well, and what else are we talking about? I think that's it. We're going to do a rolling report card. We're going to talk about the Storm and how they're traveling this year, which obviously is a lot better than the Eels at the moment. But, there's a lot to get into. So without any further ado, let's jump into tackle number one, where we review round 11, the Magic Round of the NRL. Here we go. All right, so Magic Round for 2024 has come and gone. Suncorp Stadium, Brisbane, was the focal point for all 8 games this weekend. And there were some doozies. In fact, most of the games were pretty close. So let's roll through the results and then we'll go through some of our highlights, and then we'll do our Magic Round report card where we focus on the concept and what the future looks like. So the Raiders, 24-20 over the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. The Broncos 13-12 over Manly, the Knights 28-24 over the Gold Coast Titans, the Sharks 38-30 over the Sydney Roosters, the Cowboys 28-22 over the South Sydney Rabbitohs, the Warriors in an upset 22-20 over the Penrith Panthers, the Storm 48-16, really the biggest blowout of the weekend, the only one against the Eels. And then the Dolphins 24-12 over the Tigers. And obviously the bye was with the Dragons, so they didn't really play. Look, a lot of good games, but I would say for me, Tish, the top two games were the Sharks, Roosters, and the Warriors, Panthers games, but that's not to say that the other games weren't exciting as well. I think the Sharks, look, we talked about, are they the real deal? I think this kind of cemented them as number one on the ladder. And yeah, they did it in style, and they did it with Nico Hines back as well. And, you know, they're going great guns. And then obviously the Warriors and the Panthers, I think the Warriors were due for a win. And I think this is probably the win that's going to spark them. You know, I think they had a lot of injuries as well and players out, and yet they still did it over the Panthers, who themselves are kind of injury hit, obviously, with Cleary not there. Those to me were the games of the round. Tish, what about you?
Well, Dr. T, I do have to agree. I think, look, it was a great round. I think the first six out of the eight games were like, you know, I think the largest winning margin was like 8 points, right? Most of those games were like a try in it, a couple of points in it, basically, you know, 2 points in one game. And, you know, so really, really close, to the point where I believe that it was being tracked to be the round that had the most closest, you know, margins ever. But then, you know, the last two matches, which involved both our teams losing, you know, sort of made that not happen. And yeah, the other thing that was interesting is that all four of the Western Sydney teams, the Eels, the Tigers, the Bulldogs, and the Panthers losing in one round up at Suncorp, and three out of the four Queensland teams winning. You know, poor old Titans couldn't get that win, but they played, you know, they were definitely very spirited against the Knights. So, look, I found the Raiders game to be quite exciting as well. I'm going to say Raiders and Bulldogs. There were a couple of sin bins here and there that kind of did it. There was a few sin bins throughout the whole round as well. So it'd be interesting to see how that was. But I think it was, in the end, it was another carnival atmosphere. It was kind of great. It is interesting with Magic Round. They do this thing where they'll, I don't know if we're going to get that into the next tackle, but they kind of, announce the crowd being capacity crowd, but you don't see anybody there because people sort of come and leave as they like. So I don't know what that was about. I don't know what that was about, but
that's a clear explanation for that. I think people probably stay for a team or their team and then they go later, but they still count. They paid their money. They came through the turnstiles. Still counts.
And if you were thoroughly entertained because, like as you said, all the games were in the balance up until right at the end. And look, even with the blowout games, I think there was some really great tries scored from all the teams as well. So I think overall, like a fantastic round of the rugby, you know, of rugby league. And yeah, the Warriors result, I think, is, look, I'd say the Warriors and probably the Raiders and the Sharks, I think they're all very significant. And to be honest, let's throw the Knights in there too, because I think that's the fifth or fourth game in a row that Knights have won without Kalen Ponga. So there are some teams, you know, the Sharks and the Knights are sort of heating up a little bit. The Raiders, they've come back, you know, they've had a couple of injuries, but now they've come back from a bye a little bit fresh. You know, can the Warriors turn around? So I think some of these results are going to, as we get into the middle end of the ladder, this could have a significant impact on how the finals will shape up.
Absolutely. All right, you did mention we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the Magic Round. Let's do that. Tackle number two, here we go. All right. So as you said, there are in total, there were 150,000 or so fans over the 3 days, which is a real great success. I think, you know, the usual trolls you'll see on the internet saying that's, you know, over 8 games, that's 3 games for the AFL. Well, that may be the case, but, you know, we can't all play in the MCG, guys. Like, that's a bit unfair that, you know, you have any teams out of the one stadium, which is like perfectly centrally located. We just do not have that in Sydney. And look, when it comes to Brisbane as well, I think, look, it's, it's a tick of approval for the the Brisbane being the home of this kind of, you know, passionate rugby league supporters. You did have lots of different, it wasn't just all a Broncos or Queensland fest. You had a lot of Kiwis there supporting the Warriors. In fact, the Warriors, I think crowd was, I think it's fair to say, felt like a home crowd for the Warriors against the Panthers, which is, I think, to be honest, that's probably why I tipped them, because I think I did say it in our tipping last week that there would be a massive kind of either a crowd against the Panthers because of what they did to them in the Broncos in the grand final, or definitely some support for the Warriors, and that's what ended up happening. So, you know, big success for Brisbane. I think the talk is that Brisbane is locked in for at least another 3 years or so, I believe, as the Magic Round host. But there's also been talk around whether, as a concept, could it be moved around to other cities? Could it be an opportunity or a product that could go to, you know, say the Perths of the world or whatever, that kind of thing? Or New Zealand is also being touted as a particular venue, you know, one way to spark interest in New Zealand. And also as a way, I think we've spoken about this before, in fact, not a new idea. I think we you heard it here first in Rugby League Republic last year, I believe, when we talked about what the game can do to give back to the New Zealand Warriors and their fans for all the sacrifices that the team made during the COVID lockdown situation, where, you know, they had, a lot of people had to be away from their families for quite a long time in order for the season to go ahead. And so, look, you know, it's possible that the NRL should maybe pull some strings. And yes, they've got a contract with Brisbane. I don't know why they did that. Why did they didn't think of sending it around to other states and cities first? But, you know, they've proven, in my mind, I guess the question is it a proven concept? I would say yes. You know, should it stay in Brisbane, or should it be one of these things that gets shopped around and moved around? So kind of it's like a traveling kind of, you know, a way to inject rugby league positivity into a crowd, into a city for a few days. Great promotional opportunities for NRL. So I guess those are the questions I'm going to throw to you, Tish. And finally, you know, even if we agree that it's a good product and a great product, how do we make it even better? So I'll throw those to you. What do you reckon about the concept, where the future lies, and how can we improve it?
Yeah. Well, look, Brisbane has been signed up to the end of 2027. But there was three more bidders as well. Well, actually, there was bids from Sydney, Adelaide, Auckland, and Perth. So for other cities that actually bid for it, and Brisbane had won. So it does look like, I mean, I think this has been the criticism of the Magic Round is, like, why is it always in Brisbane? And I think it's, and it was a bit frustrating, and I definitely was frustrated. I don't know, like, you know, it should go to other cities and stuff like this. But like, it's become a bit of a home and a fixture at Suncorp now, hasn't it? Because we've had so many. Well, we've had all of them there, right? So, and I did hear some people saying, hey, I'd love to go to Brisbane one day and see the Magic Round. So it's almost become attached to Brisbane because they've just had many in Brisbane right now. So I don't know how that's going to go, because now you're going to have that traditional thing where people are like, oh, it's tradition, we have to have it in Brisbane, right? I think the talk might be changing slightly. And I think before it goes all the way, I think they should actually test it out in Adelaide, Auckland, Perth, certainly another place where we want to expand, because I think that was a good reason. I think that's why the Dolphins had so much great success as well, because they did have the Magic Round, and, you know, talk of another Brisbane club coming in kind of made that year upon year excitement that, hey, this is why we're going to Magic Round and so forth. So Brisbane, it's kind of becoming a tradition, I think. People do want to travel to it. That's great. But I would one day love to see it in Auckland, love to see it in Perth. Not 100% sure on Adelaide, but sure, if it wins the bid, why not, right? It could be a great atmosphere. And, you know, is this the reason why, you know, Brisbane is dropping the Olympics, because it put all its money into the NRL Magic Round? Surely not, Dr. T.
Wow, that would be... Oof, I hope Peter Volandis realizes what's going on here. He's got to fix it, right?
He does. He's outwitted one Antonio Samaranch in the bidding stakes for the love of Brisbane.
That's right. I mean, look, they both believe in magic, so that's the commonality. But you know, Peter Volandis's hair stays completely still. That's magic as well. But look, I'm hoping that Peter Volandis can and the NRL can take advantage of the goodwill and the success story. You know, look, you got to hand it to the NRL. This is something that, you know, started several years ago, and you know, a lot of people thought, oh, we're just sort of copying what's happened over there in the UK, and it was actually kind of the purpose of it was kind of different. But we've made it our own, and in fact, so much so that I think, you know, isn't the greatest form of flattery imitation? Isn't that what they say? Well, wouldn't you know it, not long after we've proven the success of something like this, hasn't the AFL started doing something similar? Don't they call it the gather round or something like that, which is kind of lame, but it's like the same thing, isn't it? They all go to one particular city or whatever, and the whole round comes out of there. So, look, you know, the fact that they're copying us, again, Peter Volandis will be looking at that as, you know, here is another product that we've come up with that we've, you know, another way to make another week in an otherwise long NRL season interesting, and also bring things to the fans. There's so many positives here. And I agree with what you said. I think one day I'd love to see it traveling around. I'd love to see this not just be a thing that, you know, gets stuck to a particular city, but that the concept itself of everyone going to one place, you know, making it a festival of whatever that city is for a week. You know, call it NRL comes to you. Okay, you know, call it the NRL NRL sponsored by Amazon. We bring things to you. You know, you don't have to leave your house. You know, it's that kind of thing. But I love the concept. I think it's great, and I do hope that they really take seriously the Auckland or New Zealand option sooner rather than later, because I think it. You know, people will have short memories and will forget what sacrifices they made for everyone else during the COVID lockdowns.
Yeah. And let's not forget that this is a concept birth out of Mother England, you know, and we pay our respects to everything that they've brought into the world. And I think one of the greatest things they've ever brought is the Magic Round. So thanks to the Super League, because it is their original concept, right?
Absolutely. All right. Look, let's move on to the biggest news of the week and of the year for a new.
Were we going to talk about how we could improve the product?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Let's. Well, I mean, there's not much. Well, let's improve it by going to New Zealand, I would say. But look, do you have any other ideas? Let's go.
Well, I found this fact absolutely shocking, and I think the NRL needs to do something about it, but there was absolutely no professional magicians performing in Magic Round. So what? I think the way you've got to do it, you've got to invite Dymo, David Copperfield, Siegfried and Roy, you know, Penn and Teller. We need some actual magicians at Magic Round. Can you believe it, Dr. T?
I think that's a top idea. I think it needs to actually let's turn it into like a circus with a magician. And look, I'm all for it. I think
Let's have a Tigers Bulldogs game with actual Tigers and Bulldogs. What the roots of the Tigers? That'd be amazing.
I'm not for sacrificial Bulldogs or hurting of any animals whatsoever. Although I do look forward to the Storm and the Sharks in Sharknado 5.
Sharknado, yeah, that's right.
But look, I think in all seriousness, I think there is there's something about, it's called Magic Round, but you could sort of go, well, what's the magic in it? Just everyone coming together. It doesn't make any sense that it's called Magic Round. But the concept, you know, you could call it, you know, Festival Round or, you know, surely do not call it Gather Round, because that's a, you know, that is a pun that belongs well and truly in Melbourne and the southern states. But But I think you know, let's have a bit of fun with it. And yeah, let's invite David Copperfield and whoever else. You know, let's lock David Blaine up in a glass cage, you know, near the scoreboard, and see if he can get out before the Eels capitulate. You know, make it, give him some challenge, give him a challenge. Absolutely. And go, David, if you can get out and burst onto the field with a $5,000 fine before the Eels lose the game, then we will pay your fine. We will waive your fine and lifetime ban, David Blaine, or Daniel Blaine. What's his name? David Blaine. Yeah, look, David Copperfield as well. Who else? Penn and Teller, definitely. I think they're still in the game, aren't they, Penn and Teller? They're still doing TV series and things like that. Yeah, absolutely. And if you really want to get to it, you know, get John Edward to come over and, you know, or any sort of median that can come over. Maybe that's not really magic. That's more supernatural kind of thing. But, like, maybe they can sort of talk to previous Parramatta Eels coaches and see if anyone can magically bring some wisdom from the other side. You know, but look, there's a lot that we can do to improve. I think if they focus on the fact that there is a festival atmosphere, and therefore what can you do when there's a big party, do that, you know, do live sites for people who can't get in, do, you know, find ways to have fun things. So I don't know if this actually happened, because obviously we didn't go to the actual ground. But look, Magic Round, I think, is probably an opportunity to not just do games, you know, play the games, but also have, like, those competitions, like, you know, who's the fastest NRL player? Do, like, a sprint race. You know, yeah. Genuinely, I'm serious. Do things like this. Make it, and I'm not saying make it a big Olympics kind of event, but, like, do things like that. That would be a true Magic Round. Can you imagine that, you know, on the third day, the Sunday, you've got two games, but in between the two games, there's, like, an hour where you'll see, you know, world's strongest NRL player, you know, they've got to lift weights and carry it 10 meters or whatever.
NRL Ninja Warrior, basically.
Oh, even better, NRL Ninja Warrior. I don't know if they could set up that on the field quick enough in between games, but, you know, that would be pretty hard to set up. But if they can do, you know, if they can do that for the halftime shows at NFL, the Super Bowl, why not? They could set up a stage or something and do a few obstacles. There's so much you can do. And I think, look, make it a little bit like the All-Star Weekend in NBA, where they've got all these games and things and, you know, three-point contests. And, you know, I'd love to see, genuinely, a goal-kicking contest. Have we ever seen that? A genuine, like a goal-kicking contest. You got several, you know, imagine several footballs set up at various, you know, points on an arc, and you've got a time limit of, like, a minute to kick as many goals as you can from the sideline, then you swing your way in, then you go all the way from left to right or whatever. Like, and you got a minute, or, you know, whatever, 2 minutes, or whatever's appropriate. And, you know, and the one that's from the outside gets the most, gets double points because it's the hardest angle, that kind of thing. I'd love to see that, you know. I mean, it's one thing to sort of get a percentage of goals kicked during the year, but you know that they're kind of, you know, it depends on whether your team is the kind of team that scores goals in, tries in the middle versus always scores on the side. So, you know, how difficult your kick is as a kicker. So, I would love to see a proper competition. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
Fastest NRL player, that's another thing. You could do a, you know, obstacle course like you suggested, some sort of a Ninja Warrior course. That would be fantastic. What other ones, since we're on this train of thought, what other ones
would you suggest? Cheer-off maybe between the cheerleading squads. I don't know if that's inappropriate in 2024, but that would be
Well, the South Sydney don't have cheer squad anymore. Don't they have the drummers?
Oh, yeah. They have, like, a drum off, like, you know, we just, like,
well, they'd be the winners because they're the only ones. I mean, you could always do, like, loudest cheer. And so one could be the Canberra Raiders, the Nordic, what is it, the Viking clap,
the Viking
versus
clap,
the South Sydney drums. Like, which one's the loudest?
Well, Brisbane have we can do the river boat race. Like, wasn't that like weren't the original NRL teams rowing teams or something like that? The North Sydney Bears had to row themselves to the ground before the bridge. You know, so that's bringing back a bit of tradition.
Possibly. And look, you know, yeah, you're right. Like Penrith, they do have a beach now, but they also used to. They're also on the river, so they do have access to water. Some clubs don't. Look, there's so much more that we could go on with, but I think it's fair to say there's some really great ideas there that the NRL could start looking into. But I would say, look, if you're gonna make this about the festival of rugby league, then don't just make it, you know, just the games and that's it. Like, make it a bit of fun, and possibly, like I said, if you don't have any other time of the year where you have these kind of competitions, why not do it during Magic Round? That's what sets it apart compared to the other rounds, not just the fact that it's located and centred on one stadium or one city. So, all right, look, let's get on to the news of the week. Brad Arthur sacking, tackle number 3, here we go. All right, look, as I said, there's quite a lot to unpack here, but the unfortunate thing is that, you know, what you see in the media and what we're going to talk about now, there's a few things just to keep in mind, everyone, that a lot of people are getting sidetracked by the way it was done and are forgetting that, you know, and they're getting that confused with, because it was done poorly, maybe it shouldn't have been done. And I would like to sort of go on the record to say that I've been saying for a long time that I think his tenure at Parramatta has been long overdue, and they really should have looked a bit sooner. This year, last year, he has looked very clueless as to when things went wrong. He persisted in making, and I'm not the only one to say this, we've said this before, and a lot of people have been saying this, he's persisted in making poor choices in the way he rotates his bench. He's allowed certain players to stay there when clearly they should have gone to reserve grade for a bit of a spell. He's picked players not necessarily in form. In fact, he's persisted with players that were woefully out of form and exposed some very big problems in our, for example, left side defense. You can run down the list of things, but I think the straw that broke the camel's back has been really the last 4 weeks or so, where, you know, they had a habit of, you know, they were competitive up until half time, and then they just completely, and I wouldn't say it's fatigue, because it's not like as if they fell away in the last 10 minutes. They just completely lost the plot as soon as they came out of the sheds. They look like a completely different team, and so much so that the teams, all of those have been, you know, 30, 40-point floggings all of those last 4 games or so. And it's been a consistent thing. And it started with back when Gutho was uninjured. They were, you know, very solemn press conferences talking about how, you know, some players need to step up. And, you know, I remember saying at the time, Tish, I'd never heard players rip into other players and talk about how some really need to step up. I thought that was a positive thing, that they were focusing on accountability, personal accountability. But I think in retrospect, I think the problem has been, it looked like at the time that Brad Arthur lost the dressing room. Now, not completely, because in all of those games, I believe, where they got flogged, they were competitive. In fact, in some cases, they were leading going into halftime. And then they just lost the plot after halftime. So, you know, one way to look at it is Brad Arthur is a terrible second half motivator, halftime motivator. he motivates them to get flogged in the second half for whatever reason. But look, it's a lot more than that, mate. It's if I'm going to not write in the eulogy here for Brad Arthur's time at Parramatta, because I think he's done so much good to lift us off the ground. I think he proved, though, once we got to the grand final in 2022, that he just had no idea how to take us to that next level. That was in a year that we had beaten the Penrith Panthers 3 other times In fact, we were the only team that were unbeaten against them until the grand final, and then we got absolutely smashed and looked very clueless. And I think, you know, that I remember saying at the time, Tish, that look, this is an example of where some coaches are really good at building teams up from nothing, and that's their skills. That's their skill set. They're able to somehow make the most out of average players. But if you want to get if you want to take that next step and turn it into a sustainable long-term success like we've seen at the Panthers, if you want to develop a system that you can hang your hat on and build better recruitment and get the attract the good players and get the most out of them and get success, it didn't look like Brad Arthur was the answer, and they would have to look elsewhere. So look, again, I'm bringing that up, Tish, because there's a lot of comments around when it was done. As I said, poor timing. You couldn't even ask for worse timing. The day before his 50th birthday, they decided to sack him effective immediately. They didn't even give him until the end of the year. Like, I would have thought they would have said, look, we're gonna look elsewhere next year. We'll give you the rest of the year to sort things out, but we're looking elsewhere. I think they just thought cut the ties. I think they were sick of what happened the last 4 weeks, and they probably thought it's getting worse and worse and worse. There are rumors as well that usually when things like this happen, there's some either player unrest or some sort of dodgy, nefarious stuff going on in the background. There is a rumor that one of the player agents, I think it's Isaac Moses, I'm not sure, has agitated, shall I say, the board to kind of go towards, I think, and is he Blaise Talangi's manager as well as a few others. He's agitated for the board to kind of look at Brad Arthur and getting rid of him for whatever reason. So, look, I don't know what's true or not, what's not, Tish, but I'll throw to you. That is my take on all of this, that I think the time – I'm not against what they did. Definitely I'm against how they did it, but that doesn't in any way, shape or form undermine the fact that it had to be done. I guess this is one way of saying – look, if you peel off the Band-Aid slowly and you rip off some hairs, it's painful. You could have done it better by ripping it off quickly, and should have done it better, should have done it earlier, as a lot of people have been saying, should have ripped the Band-Aid quicker. But at the end of the day, the Band-Aid had to come off, and that's the end result. So, look, Tish, that's my little rant and monologue about it. What are your thoughts on any of that? And, just tell me what your thoughts are.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. The timing was absolutely shocking, and everything that you said, I think, has summed it up well. There is also that thing where they were asked, I think they were trying to get Wayne Bennett. They couldn't get him. He's already announced he's gone south, but then they announced it anyway that they were going for him. So maybe the media, like, you can keep that in-house, right? Like, that you didn't get Wayne Bennett. You don't have to tell the world that, right? So I didn't understand. That part could have been done better. But in terms of Brad Arthur's 10 years, is this the right decision? I believe it is, as well, because he has, he's the second most capped coach, for a long period, right? Which is from, he had a bit to do with them in 2012 after they sacked Stephen Kearney. And remember they finished Wooden Spoon in 2012, so that's where he took them from. And they also, I believe, finished Wooden Spoon in 2013 they appointed Ricky Stewart, right? And then that also turned into a Wooden Spoon. So back-to-back Wooden Spoons, and then he took over full-time coach from 2014 and got him to a premiership. Premiership match, right? So basically runners up, was it 2023, right? 2021.
2022,
yeah, that's it. So,
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago. So that's definitely an achievement, right, that he's done. He's not the worst coach Parramatta have had. That distinction goes to Jack Rayner, who had 3 years with them and got 3 Wooden Spoons. 7 wins out of 54 games, 13%. So he's definitely not in that category, right? He's had a really good run, but I think where the Parramatta fans want their team to be and where they have gotten to, it's kind of kind of not happening right now. And, you know, he's on the tail end towards his tenure. You can kind of see that now with obviously having the injuries, not being able to perform, really not having a backup plan apart from, well, we just got to keep Mitchell Moses healthy and Clint Gutherson healthy. So I think there is a bit of work that I think Parramatta need to do. And I don't think Brad Arthur is the right man to do it. I think he probably signals the new change. So it'd be interesting to see. I think Trent Barrett's the interim coach. I don't think he's their plans for full term. You know, who knows what it will be. There's coaches out there. But, you know, the timing thing, I think this is the other part of the awful timing situation is that, you know, I think Shane Flanagan's a great coach. I think Michael Maguire's a great coach. Wayne Bennett's a great coach. But they've all got gigs at the moment, right? Various sort of things. So who's out there as a coach that's got a bit of experience that could do this job? You know, I think that's a bit tricky to figure that one out. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't think anybody's after Tim Sheens, for example. You know, he's left the Tigers. You know, maybe Demetrio? Is that the big reveal? You know, like who was that man? It's Demetrio. I don't know. So
no, look, can I go back to, I mean, you've moved on to now what the future holds, who's the next coach going to be? And you mentioned Wayne Bennett. That whole thing, again, I'm going back to the situation of the timing. We know, I agree, the board is terrible. Maybe we need a board clean out. Absolutely agree with what people are saying online. This just shows how inept they are in the back office. Absolutely agree with that. You know, if you're going to go after Wayne Bennett, you should have done it in a much smarter way and not revealed your intentions after the after he's already intended and made public his intention to go to South anyway, even if he hadn't signed on the dotted line until the day after you've announced that you've sacked Brad Arthur, which is ridiculous. But look, the question about the future is, you know, is at the moment, like every time we've talked, you're right, every time we talked about the coach merry-go-round, there's always the question of who's around that can actually move things forward. Now, you've seen some of the big clubs opt for Penrith assistant coaches as the go-to. I don't think we have that luxury. I think, you know, we're not going to go for Wayne Bennett. We wanted to go for the quick fix, you know, greatest coach of all time kind of thing, who has proven that he can win in multiple places. So that's great. But look, at the end of the day, Wayne Bennett didn't win at Souths. But do you know who did win at Souths? Michael Maguire. And do you know who doesn't have, if I'm not mistaken, he does not have an NRL team, although he is the Blues coach. Am I right in saying that he doesn't have an NRL team?
He does not have an NRL team,
Look, if you're looking at who's won a very challenging team, he's delivered South a premiership when no one else could for 50 years or so. Not even Wayne Bennett, who came after him, spent time there, loves the place, is going back there, did not deliver them a premiership. In fact, a lot of people are whinging about the fact that they were a rabble when he left, and they've been chasing their tail ever since. And however, Michael Maguire, yes, he's had a tough time at the Tigers and you know, hasn't really followed up his success at South, and surely you could say a lot of planets aligned when he was there. But he took advantage of the opportunity and he got them the premiership in a very, you know, no expectations would have been higher than a Souths coach at that time, having Inglis, having all the players, you know, the Burgess brothers and all this stuff, the Russell Crowes of the world, like all of this stuff coming together would have been an intense pressure cooker situation. The only other team, I believe, that would have the same level of intense pressure from history is very clearly the Eels. And I look at, you know, Michael Maguire, I think it remains to be seen how they go in the Blues state of origin. But if I was the Eels, I would be, you know, giving him a call and saying, look, let's see how you go during origin, see what you think. If you feel like coming back to the NRL, the door's open, we want you. We think you've got the skills and the temperament to get us over the line in a way that it wasn't able to be done before, at the Eels. So he could definitely, and they need someone who can build them up to that point, and he can do it. So I think he's a front runner. I can't think of too many others. I know there's been talk about some of the coaches from the English Super League, but I really genuinely think that if you're looking at someone who's actually had recent success, you can't go past Michael Maguire. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking. But tell us what you guys think out there, and Tish, if you have no further comments to add, move on, or I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, look, Michael Maguire used to be a coach for the Storm, and that's who we're going to talk about next. He was an assistant coach of the Storm. So yeah.
Assistant coach, yeah, there's always a Storm assistant coach around. All right, let's go to tackle number four, the Rugby League Rolling Report Card, Melbourne Storm. All right, so in this segment, we focus on one club and give our report card on how they are travelling so far this year. So far, we've looked at the Eels, the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Sharks, the Seagulls, the Bulldogs, and the Warriors. And this week, we're going to stop and take a look at the Melbourne Storm. So let's have a look firstly at the ladder. So if we're starting from where are they on the ladder? They are second on the ladder behind the Storm, behind the Sharks, sorry. They're on 18 points. They've won 8 and they've lost 2. Their for and against is 264, 179 against, with a difference of plus 81. So it's definitely up there with some of the best. They are very strong at home, having only lost 1 game at home. They've also only lost 1 game away. So those are their 2 losses. If we look at their attack, we're saying they've scored 260 points for. They are, I think, fourth potentially. I think the team with the most, fifth or sixth. The team with the most attack, the best attack is the Roosters at the moment. Obviously, they've had a pretty big run of massive scores recently. Just behind them is, I think, the Sharks at 282. Then you've got in around the 270s, you've got, Broncos 277, Seagulls 273, Cowboys 275. And then I would say, does that make them fifth? I think so. The Storm at 260. The Dolphins at 266. I miss them as well. So six, I would say. Sixth best, not really fantastic. I think they have actually struggled a little bit, and I don't think you could say that the Storm this year have been an attacking team. They're certainly not what they're renowned for. They're renowned more for the defense, and that's what we're going to talk about next. But in terms of their attack, you would very much see them win very low scoring games. Once in a while, they'll put a ton on someone or a half ton, as they almost did against the Eels and they did against the Rabbitohs earlier this year. But most of their wins have been very tight and low scoring. So that to me sort of indicates they're a more defense orientated team. So I would say as far as attack goes, they're clinical, but they're not necessarily innovative in attack. I'll give them a B. What do you reckon?
Yeah, look, I think a B is a good score. I do see them score quite quickly, and I do see some really great tries. I mean, they have some spectacular tries when they sort of score as well. And then obviously they've got a lot of great attack when it comes to like players like Munster and Pepenhausen and Jerome Hughes. So when they put it together, that they are quite exciting, and I actually really like. Yeah, they're kind of attacking a different way. They don't really have a ball playing lock at all. So what happens is that when they do a backline play, most other teams they'll have a lock who will actually take who'll do the first pass. Some of them run into the line, like sprint to the line and then pass it back to the halfback, and then they spread it that way, and that's how they get the ball out quickly. But what the Storm do is they do a cutout pass that goes about 20, 40 metres to the half, who then gets it quickly out to their back. So they attack with a flatter line. It looks spectacular when they do it, and they get it right really good. So I think they've got... Yeah, so they attack a bit differently. I think that's why they look a little bit different to other teams when they attack. And it is good. So I think they're very well drilled. But yeah, like just the fact that they don't seem to go on with it, I think that's what is not giving them an A. So I think a B is a pretty fair score for their attack. And I'll just go right ahead. I actually think their defense is also a B as well. Like, I don't think they're in the top four teams for defense necessarily.
Yeah, they are. Let me correct you. Fact check time. I think it's fair. I'll stick with your B for now, and then I'll raise it to an A, because they are actually the equal third best defense. Here's the thing, right? The best defense. Let me just ask you, who do you think the best defense is? Without looking at, don't cheat. Don't look at the NRL ladder. Who's got the best defense so far this year?
Well, I think Sharks are number one, so I think it'd be the Sharks, right?
Close. Pick again. Who else would you pick? Who's renowned for their strong defense?
Panthers, really. Panthers and maybe Roosters, yeah.
Definitely not Roosters. Panthers are 156 against, and Sharks are 158. And they are at least 20 points better than, they're 20, 22 points better, 21 points better than the next best team, and there are two teams on equal third. One of them is the Storm on 179. So what I'm saying is Sharks and Panthers, I would say they're equal best kind of defense, but then the next tier down is the Storm. But please guess who is equal with the Storm on 179 against. You'll never guess.
Okay, so who's had good defense this year? Not the Sea Eagles, not the Tigers. You said Roosters are well down. Maybe the Knights.
No. Try again. I'll give you two more chances.
There's not that many teams left. I think the Titans have been pretty good, but I don't think they've been good enough. I think the Dogs have had pretty good defense, but they do leak points as well. Is it the Dogs? Or the Raiders?
It is the Bulldogs. Yeah. You got it. So there you go. Wow. Look, this is a team that, yeah, as we know, last year they were leaking points everywhere. But this year they are the equal third best defense lined up with the Storm on 179 against, which is astounding. I would never have guessed it, but you're right. They are definitely turning their reputation. Look, this isn't about the Bulldogs, but this just to tell you that the Storm are not that far off, so that's why I can't give them an A+ for a defense. But I think, look, I've got to tell you, the games that they have won, like I said, there's been lots of low-scoring games. Clearly they've won on defense. They've got quite a few. They've got a bit of a reputation this year of really having some major defensive efforts to win games. I think there's the Anzac Day game, that kind of thing. There's quite a few examples of that already. So to me, it's like, yeah, the numbers don't show that they are they're not the best defense, but when it counts, they are, and they can bring it on. So to me, I would say it's a Craig Bellamy special A, but not A+. Now momentum is the next kind of criteria that we look at, and at the moment, look, they've just had a bit of a hiccup there with the loss to the Sharks in the last round. Obviously, they, you know, look at the previous three or four. They had, let me go further back. In fact, from, you know, they've, like I said, they've had some very tight, let's go all the way to the beginning, round one. They had an 8-0 win against the Panthers. They only just beat the Warriors by 4 points. They lost to the Knights by 2. They beat the Broncos by 2. They beat the Bulldogs by 2. They beat the Roosters by 6. Then they flogged the Rabbitohs by 34. Then they beat the Titans by only 2. So they're beating or losing by a very small margin. But then the Sharks beat them, top of the table clash just recently. And obviously at Magic Round, they absolutely demolished the Eels. So they've really only demolished, you know, the two of the worst teams. Two of the teams that have sacked their coaches, South and Eels, were demolished by the Storm. And so, in fact, I don't even know. Is it possible that the Storm flogging you lines up with you losing your coach? Potentially that's what happened. I don't remember when Demetrio lost his job. But look, yeah, I think momentum-wise, it's kind of been a bit up and down. So I would say B, it's not like they're not building towards anything. They're not getting better. They're not necessarily – like they're still losing or beating teams by like a small margin. That to me is not a sign of they're getting better and better. So I can't give them an A for momentum, but B I think is definitely fair. If we go to depth, again, if you look at the players that they've got, they've got quite a lot of depth, and they're going to be tested very soon because Munster is injured for quite some time. And, you know, like some of their players, they rely quite a lot on Jerome Hughes. You know, they don't really have, like, they have not been tested really. And some of their star players, Xavier Coates, have been there. Papenhuyzen has unfortunately been kind of injury prone, but they've managed to have, I think they've had Nick Meaney be the fullback, and he's been pretty good. So I'd say, look, unless you disagree, I would say a B plus for depth. I think they're quite one of the good teams that have a lot of depth. But yeah, what else?
Well, look, I want to give them A for depth because I feel like they're one of these teams where they don't miss a beat when they get injuries, right? Like,
I agree with you.
Everybody else that could be an A like that, they really seem to be able to cover all positions, even by not having the right person in the right position too. It's kind of crazy, right? But that's the Storm.
Fair enough. Well, I'll go with you on that. Look, let's go quick round. Let's just fire off. What do you think are the Storm's strengths, Tish?
Yeah, I think what I just mentioned, like that, their ability just to be able to play consistent football, like the way they are structured, the way they play, the way they perform, it all seems to be, everybody knows the system and knows the plan. So I think that's definitely one. I think their ability to handle pressure is also outstanding. They have more close games than anybody else. So sometimes you feel, do they actually purposely make it life difficult for them sometimes, you know? I think probably Craig Bellamy thinks that, you know.
So deliberately trying to get him angry and get him to take his blood pressure.
Yeah. So I think that's probably their two biggest strengths, the ability to handle pressure and, you know, that everybody understanding what their roles are and playing their roles perfectly.
Yeah, I agree. The structures, I agree with everything you said. I'm going to throw in, they've also got a winning mentality and coach, and I think that really makes a difference to the handling pressure kind of situation. Weaknesses, I think attack is actually a bit of a weakness. They're kind of far down the ladder a little bit in terms of the attacking approach. I think maybe sometimes they're too structured, and meaning they don't necessarily know how to get out of sticky situations if they ever end up there. Not that that's happened this year, because they've actually kept the games pretty close. So I think they haven't really been tested in terms of, you know, what happens if they're down 20? Are they ever down 20? When's the last time the Melbourne Storm have been down by 20? And I think you're right about consistency being one of the things. But I think when we see them capitulate, they do really capitulate. And so I think it's because, you know, they've got their structures and maybe can't, you know, they're a bit inflexible with their structures, and I think that's a Craig Bellamy thing. But you're right, they're flexible in the sense that they've got depth, and they players know their roles. But I guess that's the thing, if players are kind of, not that they're robotic, but they, you know, look, the systems work for them. You can't blame them for that.
If you're breaking them down, like, so I think you're saying, like, because there are times where you see Munster, for example, now he's suffered a really horrendous injury over the weekend, so we don't know how long he's going to be out. But there are times where, like Munster, he tries too hard, right? Because things aren't happening for them. And, you know, like you said, the Storm like that, you could say they're more sort of not understanding what to do, just giving him the ball. He's trying to do too many things. Nobody understands what's going on. You know, so when Munster goes broke, right? Mm. So a bit like, you know, you think about the assembly line of NRL top graders. That's what Melbourne Storm have. But then they have, the, you know, the one brilliant player that goes, yeah, that you know, sort of goes off the rails, you know, gets a factory reset and now doesn't know what's happening, right? Like, then all hell breaks loose, you know, in the Melbourne Storm factory. And I feel like that's kind of where it is. So it's almost like, you know, like if you could hold them out for like 20, 30 minutes and they've gone through all their little tricks and plays, then they've got nothing left. Do you get what I mean? You gotta defend their creativity out of them, and then the infighting begins. So yeah, so that's probably what it is. So I think there is something. Yeah, so yes, winning mentality is great, but I think it's just like once you get through to that, that's when the you know, there's something missing in the middle. And he's a great strength, but he's also the resident hothead, Nelson Asafa Solomona, right? definitely, there's a penalty here or there with him. There's a sin bin coming.
And Munster as well.
Yeah, so they do have
couple of hotheads, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to win them. You gotta beat them by with emotional intelligence, right? This is why magicians are important, Dr. T. Right? Some sort of hypnosis or something like that, just to out take them out of their comfort zone. I think that's the way. So yeah. So
fair enough.
So Frank Green might be a consultant, NRL consultant, very soon. You know.
That's right. All right, so bringing that all together, I would say, you know, it's sort of hovering around the A, I would say, or maybe A minus as overall grade. But they are, you know, they're almost there at the top, so you can't sort of give them too harsh a grade. But I think an A is a fair grade. They've still got some things to work on. And it remains to be seen now with the Munster situation whether they've got the depth to cover him and what happens, you know. Now they're going to be relying on Jerome Hughes and Harry Grant for their attack. Is that enough? Who knows? So that's
Can I just put something to you about the Melbourne Storm?
Mm.
Where we've criticised Brad Arthur, we've criticised, I think, the Sharks a little bit. When they get to the final series, they capitulate, right? Could we say the same criticism for the Storm? They seem to be the top team for most of the season, but they get to the finals and they haven't made the finals since 2020, right? So 4 years. They make the finals every year, but relatively, when they've made the finals, they don't seem to always go on with it, right? So there is a defect, definitely, right?
Yeah, look, I don't know what to say. I mean, yeah, maybe. 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 Yeah. I think that's a bit harsh way to look at it, but yeah. I mean, let's see. I mean, I think they... look, they were the last winners before the Penrith Panthers went on their three-peat. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, they haven't been out of the winner's circle for too long. But, you know, it's just Panthers' dominance at the moment. But otherwise, I think the Storm is still seen as one of the benchmarks or the, you know, the litmus test of a good season is if how you do against the Storm. And I think credit to Craig Bellamy for everything that he's done and the way he's set them up. He's just been absolutely amazing for them. Considered one of the greatest of all time coaches, quite rightly. And he's proven that now without the big four players, you know, that he's able to kind of win without them and with his structures and everything, they're consistently up there. So, look, back to my final grade. I think A is a fair grade at the moment. They're traveling very well. Storm fans, Are they going to be there at the end is the question. And it's difficult to tell because, as you know, it is a lot about the momentum and about planning for the finals and not just being, you know, at the top or near the top during the regular season. It is all about how you get there in the finals, and you need a lot to go your way. You need injuries to go your way. You need, you know, player confidence to go your way. A lot of things need to happen, and I think maybe in some ways, yeah, the Melbourne Storm have been found out by some of the other teams. You know, the Eels is one team that's actually, apart from last weekend, has had a relatively good kind of track record when they were going along swimmingly. They were pretty good against the Storm. They were one of the only teams that had the wood on the Storm, as they did with the Panthers. And so, yeah, so I would say overall grade of A. Let's leave it right there. We're going to move on to Origin now, Origin Talk, tackle number 5. We're going to do our Blues squad predictions. Here we go. All right, a lot of speculation about the halves combination that New South Wales is going to go for. I think in my mind there's a couple of players that have settled those debates in the last couple of weeks. Tish, how about we just launch into, you know, role by role, position by position, what are our predictions for the Blues squads, and let's see where we agree or disagree. So, look, I've got as my fullback James Tedesco as captain. Do you have the same?
Yes, I do.
So you agree that we, you know, there's no one else that can really challenge him? And
maybe on form you might pick the Penrith fella, but the problem is, who do you make captain, right? So that's probably the problem. Yeah, Dylan Edwards.
Yeah. Possibly. Well, I've got Dylan Edwards. I've just changed my mind. I've got him as one of the reserves. I think he's potentially is a good way. Like, they need to have him there somewhere. I think he's, you know, currently leading the Dally M's points. So you've got to have him there somewhere, and his time is almost there. And I think it's also put a bit of pressure on Tedesco having him there. So that's the way I think. On the wings, I've got Brian Toll and Zach Lomax. I know there's this issue about Zach Lomax being wanting to be centre and not winger, but I think he's done well when he's been at wing, but also he adds that element of creativity. So that's why I picked him. I think you've picked the same, which is really good. So what about our centres? I've picked Stephen Crichton on one side and Katoni Staggs on the other. What about you? You've gone with Crichton and who else?
I've gone with Matt Burton. The Penrith band back together a little bit. But I just like Burton's kicking game as an option. He's a 5/8, so I think you could have an on-field replacement if anything happens to the halves. The bombs, they're fantastic. Plus, I think, you know, he's a great running player as well, so I think he could fill that job too. Big body, I think he can handle everything defensively as well. So I just think that Burton's, I think, has to be in the starting lineup. So does Stephen Crichton, to be totally fair. So I couldn't really see anybody else taking their mantle right at the moment.
All right. Now, the 5/8 and halfback situation has been up for debate recently in the media, but I think I've landed where you've landed, which is I've got a clear favourite for 5/8 and a clear favourite for halfback. And with all the injuries, it's made things a lot clearer. I've gone for Luai at 5/8. I know a lot of people are considering Burden or who knows, some combination of Hines and Moses. But I've actually gone for Nico Hines at halfback. And that way you've got Luai and Hines. I know there's been an argument that they are similar type players. That may be the case, but I think Hines has got – I think Luai is there for more his creativity and his service to the outside backs. I don't think anyone does it as good as him, despite the fact there's been a lot of people that do not like him. Whereas I think Hines does have a good kicking game. He's got actually a good kind of calming organisational kind of influence on his squad. And let's not forget, he's also possibly is he equal points with Dylan Edwards at the top of the Dally M ladder, or is close enough to that. So he's also, so them to have been the top performing players this year very easily. And, you know, his Sharks, he's leading the Sharks to top of the table. They've beaten the hard teams, or some of the hard teams in their run. So you can't always argue that, you know, they've been soft, and he's had another year under his belt. I think it's time for Hines to take over the halfback role and make it his own. You know, although obviously he's there because of the injured Nathan Cleary, but I think, you know, he's got an opportunity to stake his claim, and he, whether it's at halfback or 5/8 in future, this is his game to do it. So I'm tipping Hines to do that. Shall we go to the forwards?
Yeah.
Look, I've got at lock Liam Martin. I know normally Yo plays there, but I thought in State of Origin, you want to sort of load up your second rowers. So I've got Ola Koatu and Angus Crichton in my second rowers. What about you? What are your back row combination, lock and second rowers?
Yeah, well, look, I've got Yo at lock. And Liam Martinson and Ola Koatu as a rower. I really do like Liam Martin, but I think he's more of a second rower. And I think Ola Koatu has to be there. Look, Angus Crichton, the fact that, well, now he's backflipped, Fifita sort of staying at the Gold Coast, but they were going to get rid of Crichton. So I trust Trent Robinson. There's obviously an issue with the way Crichton is, even though he's playing well. You know, good enough to stay at the Roosters. So I feel like there's maybe something with Crichton. Maybe he's a bit too, like, still a great high-perform player, but can he perform at Origin still? I'm not 100% sure. So that's why I think you've got to go for the future a little bit. And I think Martin sort of presents that. And you are right with Yo as well, I think, because, like, yeah, if you don't really have Cleary there, perhaps, look, I don't know. Yeah, well, this is interesting, right? So who's the lock? Oh, Cameron McInnes. And he's also the captain. So potentially, yeah, I might even change Yo to McInnes just to keep that positional play with, with Nico Hines at the moment. Yeah, so I'm going to change to it. If we've got Nico Hines as the halfback, then I'm changing it. Sorry, Yo. I'm going to put in McInnes because I think most of the time he's going to get the ball off McInnes. He's not going to get the ball off the 5/8. So I think that makes sense to keep that combination at club level going, going at Origin. So McInnes, you're in there, Sunshine.
All right. I was thinking about him as well, but I've excluded him altogether, and I'll explain why later. Our front row is looks like it's the same. So Haas, Otakamano, and Coruscant as our front row. I think it's fair to say they've been the strongest, and I'm hoping that Haas will explode in State of Origin. I think he's had a tough time off the field. Won't go into it, but some family issues and people in his family, you know, falling foul of the wrong side of the law. And Haas, I don't know how he does it, manages to maintain his focus on rugby league, and it's let's see if he maintains that focus going into Origin. Look, our reserves are all over the place. We've got some different players. Let's go for the one. Well, we've got one reserve that is consistent, Jake Trbojevic. I agree with you there. I think Jake Trbojevic probably isn't good enough to kind of start, but needs to be there somewhere as he's got like an old kind of, you know, he's a senior player and can really support the others. So I think having him off the bench as an impact player is good. As one of the other forwards, I've also got Hudson Young. And so Hudson Young has been doing great for, who's he play for again? Canberra Raiders. And I think he's earned his call up. Now you have as your other forward Tyson Frizzell back in the fold. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because he always seems to score a try when he's playing for the Blues, and we always lose by a try, right? So that's where we're going to get our extra try. Do you know what I mean?
Nice logic then, there.
Yeah. Junior Paolo I've got as well. You know, he's been playing for the Blues for the last few years. I am a little concerned about how he plays for Parramatta when he comes off the bench, because maybe one of Arthur's flaws is that he's been splitting them, and they don't seem to have as much impact with him on the bench. So I don't know if he's more of a starting guy than not. But then I realized, look, I don't want Hudson Young. It's done for me, the Young experiment, after so many penalties for the last year's Origin series with Hudson Young. And then, he's a sin bin liability as well. I think he even got sin binned as well in his first game. So we don't want that aggro. We want clean footballers who play by the rules. So I'm going to go for Luke Keary because he's retiring, and he should have got a shot ages ago, but because of injury, let's do that. And I feel like Michael Maguire, he has an acting background according to Wikipedia, so he should, I think you'll see. I think he will pick this team based on emotion and not necessarily to win the game. So that's why I've got Luke Carey in there.
All right. And I've made the late change, and I go back on. I've got a more forwards heavy reserve bench. I've got Trbojevic, Hudson Young. I've got Cameron McInnes now back in because I think you're right. I think he has actually been playing quite well. I don't think he's worthy of getting straight into the starting lineup, but I think having him there on the bench, he adds that element of he could play a hooker role, he could play a lock. He's a small enough and tough enough player. He even looks like he's an Origin player if you look at his face. That's something that is very, but look, to me, it is the reason for having that is I think we have in the past opted for bigger players, thinking that what we need is big, strong forwards. And the Queenslanders have just run rings around us because we've been unfit. And, players like a Junior Paulo that have just been, they're completely grasping at air while Xavier Coates runs past you. Like, it's just, you cannot do that. So you need, and at the moment if you've got Cameron McInnes and players like that. Well, I mean, that's the way I see it. I think let's be strategic about the kind of players that we got. We've got, if you've got the players like Trbojevic and McInnes on the bench, they are the tough forwards and they can play multiple positions. But they're also tough. And so you can, and they're small and they're, no, I'm not saying they're speedy, but, McInnes has got some speed about him. But then also having Dylan Edwards there, I think, as my roving back, and you've got so many others. You've got Lomax can play multiple roles. You've got, Crichton, Tedesco. They've got a few players that can play multiple roles and cover for any injuries, etc. So I think those are two pretty good squads. And I think there's, we don't know which way Michael Maguire is going to go. He's probably got his opinion about what's in front of him. And I'm hoping that he will be light years ahead of Freddie Fittler in terms of actually having a strategy and a game plan, and not just picking players based on limited information, so to speak. I'll give you the final word on our squads.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think we don't know where these squads are. I don't think we can't tell with Michael Maguire. There's like all these things about, like, he's got surprises up his sleeve and things like that. But what I will say is that I think one of the things that we've been burnt with, and this goes back to when Robbie Farrell was injured in the game, right? Whereas, like, we don't seem to be able to cover our injuries well. I think last year we had Damien Cook playing in the centres because there was no coverage for centres, right? So if you've got utility play, if you have a bench that is actually full of utilities that can cover multiple positions, and then you've actually got players in the team, like a Zach Lomax, who can play a fullback role, can play a wing role, but also can play a centre role, which is obviously where he's played. And then, guys like Crichton that could play fullback if they need to, but then it can also cover a whole host of positions. Same thing with Burton, like pretty much the whole squad. And even our halfback, Nico Hines, has played multiple roles before when he was at the Storm. So I think if you have a squad like that, I think you get a bit more of a total rugby league system. We're going very Dutch here. But I think that's what New South Wales have been burnt with in the past. They've had plan A, and if plan A fails, then they've got plan A, right? Whereas I think adding utilities just gives you more attacking weapons and more players that could do a role for you in defense as well. And I think that's what they need. Even a Jake Trbojevic, can play the front row, play the lock. He's got a few different positions as well. So I think that should be the strategy forward for New South Wales.
All right. Thanks for that. So we are at our last tackle, where we're going to give our tips for round 12 of the NRL, which is the Indigenous round. Here we go. All right, so last round, I got 6 out of 8 and you got 4 out of 8. Obviously, there were some upsets that I managed to tip, which is good. That brings me to a total of 47, edging closer to your total of 49. Let's see how we go this week. The Indigenous round is coming up. We are obviously going to go review all of the great events that are going to happen and some excellent jerseys for sale, Indigenous kind of limited edition jerseys for each of the teams. So look out for those. But the Indigenous round starts with the Bulldogs versus the Dragons at Accor Stadium on Thursday night. I'm tipping the Dragons. How about you, Tish?
I'm tipping the Bulldogs.
All right. We have the Cowboys Tigers Friday, 6 p.m. at Queensland Country Bank Stadium. I'm tipping the Cowboys.
I'm off the Tigers, Rickshaw. I'm tipping the Cowboys.
Manly wearing a Seagulls versus Melbourne Storm at Four Pines Park in Manly at Friday, 8 p.m. I think the home ground advantage will suit them. I know the Storm are on fire, but I think Manly have also shown they're up there with the best. So Manly for mine.
Yeah, I feel like these teams have played like twice already this year, but I'm going
to... I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Storm.
All right, Raiders versus Sydney Roosters at GIO Stadium. I'm tipping the Raiders.
Yep, look, I am going to tip the Roosters. I'm going to tip the Roosters on this one. So was it Bill Mullins over Brett Mullins?
Fair enough. All right, let's see. We got the Sharks versus the Panthers. Well, that'll be a good one. Ooh, at PointsBet Stadium, Saturday, 5:30. I think, look, it's hard to tell. The Panthers, having been shocked with what happened against the Warriors, might bounce back, so it'll be a tough one. But I think the Sharks, they seem to have it together this year, so I'm tipping the Sharks.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Panthers because they really lose two in a row, right? So I just don't see that happening, despite the form of the Sharks. However, I mean, if the Sharks do this, we're talking about beating the Roosters, beating Brisbane, and then also beating the Panthers 3 in a row, right? That would be incredible. Oh, no, beating the Storm, wasn't it? Yeah.
The Storm Panthers, yeah.
Storm, Panthers, and Roosters all together if they could do it. So
it'll be pretty good.
They're going to be motivated. Yeah. Absolutely
motivated. And it looks like I said, their defense is one of the best. And look, this is going to be the two best defensive teams. So it's going to be, I can tip it right now, this will be the match of the round. It'll be close. And I look forward to seeing that. It's going to be a great one. Rabbitohs versus Eels, the Saturday evening 7:30 game at Accor Stadium. Not sure how big a crowd we're going to get there. And we're not even going to have a farewell to Brad Arthur. So there you go. But I'm tipping the Rabbitohs. I think usually I know there's bounce back with when you change coaches, but not when you've got Trent Barrett there as coach, unfortunately. I think the Rabbitohs, they showed some promise against the Cowboys, to be honest. They showed some good fight there, and I think they'll win this one. Yeah, it might be tight, though.
Yep. This is the battle of the interim coaches who used to play for St. George Illawarra Dragons. So I'm with you. I'm going to tip the Rabbitohs. See, on paper, they have one of the best lineups, right? So you kind of think, well, they should be able to do it. But who knows? Who knows?
Absolutely. Look, Broncos and Titans have a local derby at the Suncorp Stadium at 2 p.m. Sunday. I think the Broncos will win this one.
Okay. I'm going to tip the Titans because I don't think the Broncos have ever seen daylight. This is a 2 p.m. Sunday game. How did this happen? There are up in arms about it so far. So can the Broncos even play in the daytime? Who knows? They might all sleep in and not even make it to the game. You know, so Titans for mine.
They're the vampires, aren't they? They don't react well to sunlight. But look, yeah, that's a good point there. Sunday 4 p.m. game, Warriors versus the Dolphins. This will be a great one at Go Media Stadium in Auckland. At the home crowd, after their win against the Panthers, I'm tipping the Warriors will bring them. The crowd will bring the Warriors home, up the wires.
Yeah, look, this is going to be a great game, but I'm going to tip the Dolphins. They do have a few Kiwis in their team, and it kind of feels like, you know, Tonga versus New Zealand, right? So who knows? Like, and I think Isaiah Katoa is actually Tongan too. So, I think, yeah, great atmosphere. This is going to be a great game. So, yeah, so Dolphins for mine.
Yeah, and look, I wonder how the Dolphins are going to react to the news that they are definitely losing their coach next year for 3 years and he's not coming back, which will be interesting because there was a talk about, you know, he wants to stick around a bit more. So he's kind of reneged on that and now said, no, I'm moving elsewhere, which would be very interesting. And anyway, the bye is with the Newcastle Knights. So, look, that's it. We've had a big one. We're at our 80 minutes full time. And thanks for listening. That's right. Thanks for listening. Tish, over to you to wrap up what's been a great jam-packed episode.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. But that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.